So all this year, we've raised a glass to Southern food, from sweet tea to fried chicken. Every Southern dish tells a story. But that story may be completely different depending on how the food is prepared and who's preparing it. If you're a fan of mac and cheese, for example, you know there is no one way to eat the creamy delicacy. Adrian Miller is a food scholar. Adrian, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Ashley Stokes is with the Center for the Study of the New South at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. Ashley, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I am the very worst to do these segments because I'm not a foodie, and one of you, please tell me I don't need to be a foodie to talk about mac and cheese. Someone, anyone, tell me now, anyone. Okay, so here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to, Sean Powers is one of our terrific producers on this program, and he just interviewed Atlantans about mac and cheese. So let's hear what some Atlantans have to say about mac and cheese and the way they like it.
My name is Nikki Hughes. The best way I eat mac and cheese is probably with egg and mustard. Texture, I guess, it makes it creamy.
My name is Brent Hall, and I live in Atlanta. If I've got extra stuff, I love doing onions and shiitake mushrooms and some greens in there, maybe some hot peppers.
Let's hear from more Atlantans about their love of mac and cheese.
My name is Jacqueline Gonzalez. Okay. I live in Atlanta. I'm from Puerto Rico. Growing up, the only mac and cheese you would eat there is like the Berbita pack, you know? It's not very popular to eat that there.
Oh, hey, my name is Latanya Yarko. I'm from New Orleans, but I live in Morrow. And I love Velveeta shells and cheese. And I have my own little secret. I put some chicken bouillon cubes in the water while the noodles are boiling. It gives it a more homemade taste.
All right, Adrian, let's get started here. First of all, how do you like your mac and cheese?
So I like mine really creamy. So I like a good melting cheese and some good pasta. And I have to just say, I think that intro music works for mac and cheese because I want mine sultry.
Nice tie-in. Way to make it full circle. Ashley, how about you?
Yeah, so my favorite is my mom's on the stovetop. It's also really creamy, and she just sort of cooks it on this low temperature, and everything kind of just blends together, and it's ooey, gooey, and delicious.
Ooey, gooey, and delicious. So, Adrian, how is it that mac and cheese became such a major part of, I want to start with Southern food or soul food? Let's start with soul food.
Okay. Well, I think it's best to start with Southern, because this is how I chart it, write about it. Okay, so mac and cheese started out as royalty food in Europe. So it was high-class stuff. It starts making its way down the social ladder. So then when wealthy Americans start going to Europe for long stays or visits, they got introduced to the dish, and they brought it over here. So as late as the late 1700s and early 1800s, you start seeing macaroni and cheese recipes appearing in manuscript cookbooks throughout the South. And in a lot of the big houses, you had enslaved African Americans doing the cooking. So I think that's how it starts to enter the African American diet and ultimately soul food.
And since you're our historian here, Adrian, how did it become a dish? I mean, the combination of the noodles and the cheese, how did we get mac and cheese?
Yeah, so the earliest versions of it were just the pasta and Parmesan cheese and maybe a little butter. And the earliest written recipe that I've been able to find is from a book called The Form of Curry, which was the go-to cookbook for a lot of royal kitchens, like Queen Elizabeth I, Richard II. But then over time, people, you know, how people do, they started to riff on it and add cream and other things. So it becomes like almost a DIY kind of dish over time.
So Ashley, the question I was going to originally ask, Adrian, I'll ask you now, what is the difference here between soul food and Southern food and the soul food approach to mac and cheese and the Southern food approach to mac and cheese?
Well, Adrian is definitely the expert on that, but I think that I would just say that Southern food and soul food, I think they have some commonalities in preparation, that the soul food tradition, I think, was the first to really integrate mac and cheese, kind of take away from the sort of the big house tradition and make it sort of part of daily, you know, sustenance, if you will, and kind of make it their own. But Adrian, I'll let you speak to that a little
bit. Yeah, Adrian, please.
Yeah, so when I get asked the difference between soul food and Southern food, my consistent answer is soul food tastes better. But to get to your specific question, so you have kind of two different versions. You have a quick version, like basically pasta and cheese sauce during the week, but then Sunday is when you really show off. with your mac and cheese. That's when it becomes more of like a casserole, and you add the eggs, the mustard, maybe even some meat and other things. And you see this happening in African-American cookbooks over time, too, especially cookbooks in the 1940s and 50s. Macaroni is really thought of as a casserole dish on special occasions.
So, Ashley, look, you've studied the way food communicates, right? Identity. And we're talking about Southern identity to the world, right? So how does mac and cheese communicate?
Yeah, so what we talk about in my discipline, I think there, you know, Southern food right now is so popular and people like to write about it, and we've got lots of historians. And so what we do in communication studies is we look at the role of persuasion or rhetoric in Southern food. And so how is it that language and symbols sort of create and express your identity? So when you decide to put that blue box of mac and cheese on the table, you're sending one particular message, right? But if you spend the time putting the mustard and the egg and the breadcrumb and you bring it to your family's gathering, I think you're communicating a different message about maybe your love for your family, or if you're selected to actually create the mac and cheese and bring it. For some families, that's kind of like pride of place. You're sort of queen or king of the kitchen. So I think this sends different messages.
Okay, I want to hear from Steve Sawyer of Hampton, Georgia. And his daughter, Steve, loves baked mac and cheese, and he says mac and cheese has been a part of his family for years.
In African-American households, mac and cheese is a staple because it's very inexpensive. And so, you know, when my mom was growing up, I actually asked her about this a couple years back. I said, Mom, why do we always have mac and cheese? Well, it was the cheapest thing we could get, and it was really rich, and it was filling. This one right here, this little six-year-old girl, she doesn't like cheese at all, but she loves mac and cheese.
My name is Ella. Well, I don't know why I like it, but I kind of like some yellow cheese and white cheese.
So, Ashley, that's how I remember being introduced to mac and cheese. We didn't have a whole lot growing up, but I remember it being kind of a cheap dish, and I remember there being a lot of boxes of Kraft mac and cheese in the cupboard, and it's something that I could make, and I couldn't cook a thing.
Sure, yes, and I think that's still, I think that's very typical now. I mean, my kids they sound like the age of that little girl, and they definitely, my mom and I will go to these great lengths to, you know, to put the special dish on the holiday table, and what my kids want is the creamy shells and cheese from the box. So I think, you know, I think it has that role to play, but I think what's cool about it is all of the riffs that you can add to it and all the special touches just to kind of send, you know, special messages to your family.
Okay, so what have you heard? The most inventive ways, how do people dress up their mac and cheese to make it their own unique statement?
Adrian, do you want to jump in there?
Sure, and if I can just say something about the poverty angle. So Kraft macaroni and cheese actually starts as a Depression-era dinner.
Yeah.
But even going back further than that, for a lot of relief societies, when they would feed the poor, you would often have macaroni and cheese as part of the staples that were delivered. And then macaroni and cheese was a big part of the school lunch program as well.
That
adds to that aura. So I think really the important thing is just the type of cheese that you use. Now, I use a recipe from the New York Times that calls for cottage cheese to be used in addition
cottage
to the cheddar
cheese.
And others.
Cottage cheese?
Yeah, you don't
Wait
even cook
minute.
The pasta. Yeah, yeah. You get cottage cheese, milk, and some spices, create a kind of a milk bath, and then you put the pasta in there, cover it with cheese, bake it for 30 minutes covered, and then add some more cheese and do it uncovered for another 30 minutes. Works every time.
Are you kidding me? When we started this, I thought we would talk about maybe just what meats, and now you're talking about cottage cheese you add. Any other recipes of note for you, Ashley, or Adrian, whoever wants that?
I think that I wanted to tell Adrian a funny story. My co-author, Wendy, actually, Adrian has one in his book, a recipe. And so my friend tried to make the recipe, and we like to write and talk about Southern food, but neither of us are chefs. And so she tried out to make the recipe and bring it to a gathering, and it just she couldn't get it right. And because the gathering was so special to her, that she decided not to even bother, so she ended up bringing something else. So I think your technique really matters, no matter what kind of cheeses or breadcrumbs or not.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you're dogging my recipes?
No, my friend's inability to make your recipe.
All right, let's hear from more Atlantans.
My name is Joanne Brooks, and I live in Grant Park. I've had some boxed kinds that were really sad. I feel like sometimes you can go too far, like adding lots of bacon and stuff. It gets really greasy.
I'm Avery Nisbet. I am from Bowdoin, Georgia. My least favorite would be the box macaroni and cheese that was from powder. The flavor is just totally wrong from the powdered cheese.
My name is Latanya Yarko. I live in Morrow. The worst way of having macaroni and cheese is cooking it in the microwave. It just doesn't taste homemade.
My name is Whitley Abel. I think mac and cheese is cool and it's good, but it's like one of the most unhealthy things when it's made most of the ways most people make it most of the time. So we need more local stuff in there and less processed. I mean, mac and cheese is just wheat and soy in a box.
Adrian, is it unhealthy?
No. Well, okay. Well, I guess it depends on your point of view. You know, in moderation, I don't think it's that unhealthy. But what that guy just said really hurt me. Wheat and soy in a box.
And Ashley, can the different ways mac and cheese is prepared actually create tension?
I mean, I think it can create tension, but what we would talk about in my field is how it kind of creates community through division. So, you know, this morning, all these people, the clips that you have, and then Adrian and I, and then yourself, we're all talking about our experiences with the dish. And so even if you make it with breadcrumbs and I don't, we're still talking about it. So I think that what's cool about it is even if I have nothing else in common with you, I don't know you, we can start talking about how we prepare things and maybe start a relationship.
That's outstanding. That's a food historian, Adrian Miller. Ashley Stokes, you just heard from overseas, the Center for the Study of the New South at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. Thank you both for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank
that
you.
Was fun. Thank you.